Summer city dwellers are grateful for the green shade of street trees, the cool refuge of parks, and the glimpses of front yards and planters. But most cities also host other plants that grow with surprising vigor and tenacity, and can also help cool the sizzling sidewalks and concrete. You might be tempted to call them weeds, but landscape architect David Sider has another name for them, spontaneous urban plants, which is also the name of his new book. Living on Earth's Helen Palmer went to New York City to check out his ideas in action.
Future Green Studio is a landscape architecture firm in Red Hook, Brooklyn, a gritty neighborhood along an old New York City wharf. The company's founder, David Sider, thinks weeds deserve more respect for their virtues and shows off pictures of a recent project that demonstrates what he means.
This is our most recent project that incorporates weeds. It's called Nowadays. It's a beer garden out in Ridgewood, Queens. And what we were tasked with is transforming this 18,000 square foot triangular post-industrial site and really converting it into this open park space. And so we left a lot of weeds in situ. You see Ailanthus altissima here, Tree of Heaven coming up. There's Japanese knotweed kind of hugging the fence and hugging the edges. There's mulberry plants. And then a lot of the actual plants that we seeded or planted, you'd also find growing wildly. Things like a sumac, chasmanthium, other plants like goldenrod, some of the more kind of aesthetically pleasing weeds.
And that there looks either like foxglove or like purple loosestrife.
I think that is purple loosestrife, which I would say I would never plant outside the city. And I think, you know, really when you talk about our value and perception of these plants, you really have to first start with the site. Not every, you know, weed is wonderful, but on a particular site that might be more urban, that is already degraded when you're finding it, these plants are actually the most successful and can also offer ecological and aesthetic value. We can walk on the shady side or on the weedy side. They're kind of everywhere.
Outside on the street, a riot of spontaneous urban plants sprouts up along and through the cracked sidewalks of Red Hook. There's Queen Anne's lace, bittersweet nightshade, and the ubiquitous Ailanthus, the tree of heaven.
This plant is also called the tree of Brooklyn because it was made famous
by the book,
A Tree Grows in Brooklyn. Ailanthus was intentionally cultivated in the 70s and even I think as late as the early 80s. And then they realized its kind of invasive potential and the fact that it was starting to kind of grow in areas that we really didn't want it to grow. But since it's become the kind of poster child of weeds. And right now, this plant is really covering New York City as well as many other cities. But yet people aren't really accounting for it in their calculation or indexing of urban trees. And yet there's a forest of them. They just happen to be kind of happening in these kind of more discrete locations and in locations that we don't really qualify as green space. Things like, you know, walls and streets and sidewalks and roofs. But you really find them as this kind of emergent vegetation everywhere.
As we walk, David points out several other weed species, lamb's quarters, horsetail, and the leafy Boston ivy vine crawling up an abandoned brick warehouse.
Because it's growing on this wall in this neglected space, people perceive it as a weed. The same thing happens, I think, with goldenrod, which is one of my favorite native plants. If you find that in a garden, you say, oh, what a beautiful flower. But when you find that growing on a vacant lot, you're thinking, oh, it's coming out at the same time as ragweed, it's causing hay fever. There's all these kind of negative associations with it.
We sit down on a shady park bench under a linden tree, and David talks about his new book. It's a guide filled with photos and a list of the benefits of these neglected tough plants with names like fleabane, common toadflax, and broadleaf plantain, all of them weeds to most gardeners.
My intention is to really rebrand weeds and get people to think about their ecological and performative values. So we wanted to use the title SUP, Spontaneous Urban Plants, to get people's attention and really get them to think about what plants might be acceptable in the urban environment.
So how did this whole idea of rebranding plants come about? What started it off?
Well, we originally worked on a design competition where we wanted to kind of engage the city in a unique way. So what we did was establish transect walks across each of the five boroughs here in New York City and went out in small teams to kind of document the urban plants that we found along the way.
then use the digital tool of Instagram to photograph the plants, use the filters available to kind of sensationalize the plants, and again, elevate their status and reveal their potential beauty.
So basically, people sent you snapshots of the weeds they found as they wandered through the city?
Right. Essentially, it's a user-generated database of weeds. So you can go on Instagram, take a picture of a urban weed, hashtag it spontaneous urban plants. It gets mapped to our website where we identify it. And we've really now created this kind of worldwide mapping of weeds. And what's really fascinating and something that's kind of come out of that research is that there's actually an urban flora which is starting to emerge that is almost like a native condition. It's less about the climate of that particular city or region and more about the urban conditions which it offers. So the same 150 to 200 plants that are growing here in New York, many of them are being found in Berlin or in Seoul, South Korea, or in the Netherlands. So it's fascinating to see that the urban conditions rather than climate have really started to generate which plant communities exist there.
Now, talking about the kind of weeds you've got many, many different ones. What do you think is particularly lovely, particularly beautiful, that we could really look at a little more carefully and not just call a weed?
Oh, there's so many. where should we choose from? Goldenrod is one of my favorite. White clover, I think, is a wonderful plant to kind of invade our parks and lawns. Red clover is another beautiful plant that's got nitrogen-fixing capabilities and therefore has got some great additive benefits to our soil. Queen Anne's lace is such a beautiful plant that's just starting to emerge right now.
But some of them are what we would call invasive, some of the ones you have in your list. I mean, let us take the ubiquitous reed, the Phragmites.
Yes, the worst of them. And I think, you know, if you look at the plants that are on the invasive list here in New York State, you're looking at mugwort, Japanese knotweed, Phragmites. Each of the plants really need to be studied, I think, further by botanists and urban ecologists to really understand and parse out what benefits those plants have and which ones they don't.
So taking that as your basis, that there can be some benefits to these weeds, what I would call weeds like mugwort, what would you call their benefits?
They offer all sorts of ecological services. In certain conditions, they would offer erosion control. They can offer noise mitigation. There's stormwater management qualities that they can offer. If you look at, for example, common reed or Phragmites, it's appearing in many places where traditionally we would have found cattails, right? Both plants have incredible filtering properties as plants themselves. The Phragmites, although it establishes these rampant monocultures and does have degrading effects on more naturalized areas, at the same time, it offers a lot of value in treating and filtering out the polluted water that it comes in contact with. So we really have to think site by site, you know, where is that plant potentially going to do us good? And does that plant have the ability to kind of jump from an urban condition to a more naturalized condition? And perhaps the plants that are taking those leaps are the ones that we really should be looking at trying to eradicate. But the plants aren't here just because they want to be here. They're here because our conditions are degraded. We're not really fostering the native northeast deciduous forest conditions, or here in New York, the kind of tidal estuary conditions that we would have traditionally found. What we've created is a fully altered and degraded system that the plants are really just responding to and kind of taking advantage of. I think spontaneous urban plants are actually giving us a great indicator of which plants might be successful in the future. Their resiliency in the urban environment really mimics the kind of resiliency that we're going to expect our plant life to have in the future.
Well, we're going to need our plant life to have in the future, in fact.
Absolutely. And if we think about our cities and the different types of cities that we have, you know, most of the rapidly growing cities are in our kind of global south, in Asia, South America, and those cities are hyperdense and they're pretty much devoid of vegetation. So we want to look at every unique opportunity to kind of weave in planted or unplanted landscapes to create more livable cities.
A lot of these plants, as you say, you can eat them. though probably the ones that are growing in the sidewalk you wouldn't want to eat. But what other benefits do they have? You talk about their ability to soak up rainwater. You talk about their ability to clean up the soils.
I think another thing that we should be thinking about is carbon sequestration. Although many ecologists will say you really need a forest of trees to be able to effectively sequester carbon in the urban environment, I would argue we have a forest of spontaneous trees that are really growing, and they're not documented or mapped. Nobody's really kind of understanding how many of them there are. So if we can start to lend a hand towards understanding that system in greater detail, I think we can make a case that they're actually performing great carbon capturing effects.
So things like the Tree of Heaven, the tree that grows in Brooklyn, that basically are reviled as weed trees, you would say are weed trees with a particular value?
I would, and I actually appreciate their aesthetic value as well. They're kind of wonky, you know, gnarled trees that have a particular character and quality. So again, you know, on the right site, I think that they're really effective plants.
Do you find that, in fact, the authorities agree with the value of the what you call spontaneous urban plants or other people call weeds?
I think it's a topic that they're beginning to be more receptive to. One of the biggest things that's facing New York City parks here in general is that each park gets a grade from the kind of central dispatcher about how well their park is maintained. And unfortunately, one of the biggest qualifying factors is the amount of weeds that are present. So the parks has unfortunately set up this system where weeds are essentially looked at negatively. I was recently in discussion with the head of horticulture for the New York City Parks, and she was really open and receptive to the idea of certain wild urban plants growing in parks, but she was worried about the public perception of those plants, because when people see overgrown, weedy landscapes, they think it's derelict or neglected. And parks management officials are essentially given poor management grades when weeds are allowed to kind of grow in their parks. So if we're going to rethink weeds themselves, I think we also need to get our parks department to rethink how they're valuing the management of the open spaces.
If you actually rethink weeds, you can actually see the beauty of them, the benefits of them, and actually remake our landscape?
Yes, I think you have the potential to do all of that. I mean, again, you know, our perception of weeds is really like a cultural perception. There's no particular reason why many of these plants are called weeds, except they're kind of growing in places that we don't necessarily want them to grow. So if we just kind of expand our definition of what's acceptable, I think that we'll find that many of these plants offer this kind of hidden or overlooked ecology to the city.
My mother used to say a weed is just a plant in the wrong place.
Absolutely. And then in my own little Brooklyn backyard, you know, I find fig buttercup drifting in or white snake root, these plants that are spontaneously growing, but that I appreciate the value of and create this kind of carpet of yellow and white and red throughout the seasons. So I'm teaching my own kids to think about the value of those particular plants.
That's landscape architect David Sider in Brooklyn with Living on Earth's Helen Palmer. His book is called Spontaneous Urban Plants, Weeds in New York City.